right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, July 27th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everyone. It is a cool 67 degrees, cloudy and drizzly here today in upstate New York. So where do we leave off last time? We titled the show a week ago, Brain CATG, Digital to Biological Converter, Mind, Quantum, and Death. We looked at a lot of things. We had started looking at some of the Craig Venter, Elon Musk projects that are going on with converting digital and synthetic material into biological material in order to print organisms. It was something that Craig Venter had been working on at one point with some money that he had received from DARPA, creating an assembly line, pretty much factory, to be able to high-speed print new and novel organisms that they created in a lab. We had also looked at some of the strangeness between light and matter and how you might not be you after you die if they try to bring you back. There were a couple different versions of yourself. There was the point of view me and some sort of self me, and they are trying to sort that out. And of course they will be, because we know that they are trying to merge biology with the machine and eventually upload themselves to be able to live forever. So I want to talk about some of this merging of man and machine. There was a story that Chat tipped me off to the other day, and I found it in sciencealert.com yesterday. For the very first time, a U.S. company is implanting microchips in its employees. Now, we had found a company, maybe it was last year in Sweden or Denmark somewhere, where they were giving employees the choice to have a microchip inserted in their hand. But of course, it would make things easier for getting into different rooms or being able to access secure facilities. We had also read about one, and that was the Panopticon with health insurance and utilizing like some sort of fob or whatever to be able to store their medical information. And they were using them to get Cheetos out of the vending machines. And always remember that once stuff becomes digitized, it's forever and ever out there. And as they are creating the big pulsating brain in the sky and then applying artificial intelligence to it, the best way to get better predictors is to get more and more information, because the more information they have, the better statistics they can run, and then they can determine whether or not you're operating within parameters. All right, so welcome to the team. We are always hearing how robots are going to take our jobs, especially on this show. This is from July 25th, 2 days ago. But there might be a way of preventing that grim future from happening, and that would be by becoming workplace cyborgs first. A company in Wisconsin, in the United States, has become the very first in the U.S., wouldn't you like to have that distinction, to roll out microchip implants for all of its employees, and says it is expecting over 50 of its staff members to be voluntarily chipped next week. Now, anybody who would step right up for the convenience of being able to wave your hand with superpowers like Regina Duggan had talked about to open a door or to give you access to something needs to have their head checked. And I know there's going to be a few listeners out there that are going to tell me, but Jewel, but it's so cool. And, you know, back in the day, I might have agreed with you. I had looked into some of these technologies back in the 90s, even for being able to track lost children and Nana when she wanders off with her Alzheimer's. But I don't know. I've rethought that now as we are starting to see this roll out with the Internet of Things and 5G, and maybe we'll get there. There were some disturbing 5G stories that came out over the last few days. This initiative, which is entirely optional, at least for today, for employees, at a snack stall supplier called Three Square Market, or 32M, will implant radio frequency identification chips in staff members' hands between their thumb and forefinger. Oh no, my home phone is ringing. Once tagged with the implant, which is about the size of a grain of sand, 32M says its employees will be able to perform a range of common office tasks with an effortless wave of their hand. We foresee the use of RFID technology to drive everything from making purchases in our office break room, opening doors, using copy machines, logging into our office computers, unlocking their phones, sharing business cards, you could just touch hands, bloop, bloop, transfer data, storing medical health information, and used as payment at other RFID terminals. Guys, this is the way of the future, and this is what's frightening. You're going to have that chip implanted somewhere, and yeah, it's probably not going to be in your head or at the base of your neck. It's probably going to be right in your hand, in that little area there between your index finger and your thumb. And I'm going to tell you, back in the 90s, they had been experimenting with some of this, and they ran into some issues because the human body tends to take a foreign item that's inserted into it like that and makes a cyst around it, thinking that it is something it needs to protect itself against. And they were having some problems. So what came shortly thereafter is they started RFID chipping pets. Ding. Yes, of course. Don't lose Fido. We can identify him. Just scan little Fido and we know who owns him. But don't forget also, as the vet was doing the microchip implant, the vet was also keeping track of whether or not Fido's microchip was encased in a little sebaceous cyst or not, and whether or not Fido ended up with some sort of cancer. So they were using our pets as guinea pigs, which is not surprising to me. This chip that 32M is utilizing makes use of near-field communications and are similar to the ones already used in things like credit cards, mobile payment systems, and ding, animal tag implants. And how interesting that the credit cards, everyone got a new card or a new bank card with the chip in it instead of just being able to swipe it. And of course, it's all for security. But remember, those can also be read remotely. Those are near field communications. That same kind of human implant made headlines when they were extended to the employees at a Swedish company. And this is the one I mentioned at the beginning, called Epicenter earlier this year. But this is the first time that they've been offered in the U.S. across an organization as large as 32M, which has a total of 85 employees. When the staff were informed of the program, they reacted with a mixture of reluctance and excitement, but ultimately more than half of them elected to take part. The cost of the implant is around $300 per chip, which the company says it will pay on behalf of the employees. And the rollout could well be a sign of things to come, meaning employees would no longer need to carry around their keys, ID cards, or smartphones to operate or authenticate with other systems. As for security concerns and whether people ought to be worried about their employer tracking their movements, Westby, and he's the CEO of 32M, Westby says that the chips don't include GPS yet and are secure against hacking. Now, what's interesting is this story that we read way back when about the Panopticon. That was one of the things that they could do was geolocate. They could tell whether or not employees were chatting at the coffee machine or if they were busy at work sitting at their desk. This is really a horrifying thought. I mean, not that they can't already do that with your mobile phone that you carry with you at all times. And of course, that dangling carrot. Oh, come on. There's really nothing to hack in it because it is just encrypted like credit cards are. And the chances of hacking into it are almost non-existent because it is not connected to the internet, they say. But it's okay because they can zip around and do that war hacking, like they do with wireless. They have these little reader things, and they could probably walk through a crowd and bzing, bzing. The chances of hacking into it are almost non-existent because it's not connected to the internet yet. The only way for someone to get connectivity to it is to basically chop off your hand. Well, that has to make you feel good. And as if to prove the safety of the technology, the CEO says that his wife and children, what, will also receive the implants next week, coinciding with a quote-unquote chip party being held at the company's headquarters in River Falls, Wisconsin. If employees later change their mind, they'll be able to have the implant removed, but that might not be enough to alleviate Big Brother-style privacy concerns held in some quarters. While the chips might not track workers' location by GPS, they nonetheless could give employers a huge amount of data about what employees do and when, like how often they take breaks or use the bathroom, and what kind of snacks they buy, and so on. And if you remember, even without GPS, we were able to garner from cell phone data, they call it metadata, things that you were interacting with, and then be able to map that to tell what your actions were. I would think that this was pretty invasive. On its own, that information, like what you bought or how many times you went to the bathroom, might seem fairly harmless, but it is possible that handing over even that level of information to your employer could one day pose problems, not to mention how the privacy issues could swell as the technology evolves. Many things start off with the best intentions, but sometimes intentions turn, ding, ding, says Chairman and founder of the data protection firm Cyber Scout, Adam Levin, told ABC News, "We survived thousands of years as a species without being microchipped. Is there any particular need to do it now?" That's my thoughts exactly. Everyone has a decision to make. That is, how much privacy and security are they willing to trade for convenience? And the very sad fact of the matter is that we are lazy as a species. And convenience is another one of those dopamine buttons that people like Bernays have learned to tap into to get us to fall in line. For their part, the leaders of the companies kickstarting this workplace transition don't seem to see what the fuss is all about. People ask me, "Are you chipped?" And I say, "Yes, why not?" says Epicenter CEO Frederick Kaiser to Associated Press back in April. And they all get excited about privacy issues and what that means and so forth. And for me, it's just a matter of I like to try new things and just see it as more of an enabler and what that might bring into the future. In the meantime, 32M's inaugural chip party is being held next Tuesday. And that would be July or August. That would be August 1st next Tuesday. Clear your schedule would be cyborgs because here it comes. Now, talking about would-be cyborgs, there's a couple stories that I ran into in a publication titled Asian Scientist. Keep an eye on this one, asianscientist.com. This one is titled, this came out in January, actually, but it ended up in my feed the other day, January 25th, 2017. In one of our offshore manned science divisions, I've talked about South Korea. And remember, South Korea has a lot of U.S. military institutions there, all because of North Korea, little yappy Ying Fu Ping, whatever his name is, up there. But it's also been where they have been creating lots of different robotics. We found out Foxconn, the maker of Apple iPhones, just replaced 60,000 employees with robots. Where's the factory where people are throwing themselves out windows? Well, don't worry about it now because the robot's going to take all your jobs. You don't have to work 24/7. Well, the U.S. just put in $13 million into a humanoid robot research center in South Korea. The humanoid Robot Research Center aims to advance humanoid robot technology and foster research talent in this field. And what's interesting is we just found out, I don't remember who bought it, it might have been a Chinese firm, Boston Dynamics robotic division that was sold to Google. Boston Dynamics sold. Let's see who they sold it to. So I thought it was a Chinese. Oh, SoftBank. Yes, SoftBank, I haven't heard about them in a really long time. Google sold Boston Dynamics robotic division, and that was the one with Big Dog and Atlas and all the other scary humanoid and animal-esque fast military robots to SoftBank. And that was back in June. And they are Japanese. They're not Chinese. But again, Asian. The Asians aren't going to overtake us. They've always been way more advanced than us with technology. And China's dumping billions of dollars into all of this stuff. And of course, we have the robots from the DARPA Grant Challenge being utilized in Fukushima now because no humans can withstand that amount of radiation. It looks like a lot of robots can't either. But they just found a whole ton of corium floating in the water beneath one of the reactors, and it's all dangly and orange, and it looks pretty dangerous. That was just the other day. On January 19, 2017, CAIST, I'm not sure what CAIST is, Korean something, K-A-I-S-T, it's an acronym, opened its Humanoid Robot Research Center at the CAIST Institute, endorsed by the Ministry of Trade, Industry, and Energy, with 15 billion Korean dollars, which is 12.8 million U.S., over 5 years. The center will conduct research for advancing humanoid robot technology and fostering research talent in this field. Professor Oh Jun-ho at the Department of Mechanical Engineering will serve as the director of the center, and under Oh's leadership, Team CAIST won the 2015 Ding Ding DARPA Robotics Challenge with its humanoid robot called DRC HUBO and DRC Hubo, beating 23 other teams from 6 countries. I believe we have already achieved technological prowess through developing the Hubo robot over the past decade. This center will strive for further development of the original technology crucial for humanoid robots' key components, says Oh. We want to pave the way for having enough of our own technology and needing to bring in technology abroad. Now, remember, some of the things that they're going to do with these humanoid robots is, of course, disaster recovery. I was reading a story about, wasn't Atlas, it was the NASA robot, Valkyrie it was called. Valkyrie was going to be utilized on the space station to go out and do repair jobs instead of having to send humans out there. They also were looking at utilizing Valkyrie to respond to global disasters and help you rebuild, you know, put up some UN tents or deliver water to people who were starving or thirsty in third world nations. Well, and don't think that these robots aren't going to be used for military skirmishes in the future as well. They've also been talking about off-world space missions and utilizing robots to send them to like Mars and things like that. Since we don't have a radiation shield yet that'll protect us outside of the magnetosphere, I believe, and that's, I think that's one of the reasons why they're trying to find ways to make radiation-proof robots. It's not just about sending them to Fukushima, it's about sending them to space. Oh says that we have already achieved technological prowess through the development of Hubo over the past decade, and the center will continue to strive for further development of the original technology crucial for humanoid robots' key components. We want to pave the way for having enough of our own technology and needing to bring in technology from abroad. And what's interesting is that since these guys were the winners of the 2015 DARPA Robotics Challenge, you could almost guarantee that that $13 million in U.S. Funding probably came from someplace like DARPA. Doesn't say it in here, but I'm going to guess it. The center will focus on fields such as high efficiency, high-powered electric drives, and hydraulic systems, humanoid robots capable of executing solid manipulability with high confidence and object recognition intelligence technology. In addition, the center will develop module type and extended open software in an effort to disseminate robot technology. And something that we discovered a while back is that a lot of the robotics that are going on in South Korea were with the help of Samsung, and Samsung also has a robotic military division. So I'm going to guess that there might be some sort of military connection here. Now, to add insult to injury, there was a story down at the bottom of this story. Of course, I started following links. It says, and this again is out of AsianScientist.com, these soft microbots move like cilia. Now, we know that they're spending a lot of time trying to recreate biology in a format that would allow them to merge man and machine. Well, cilia, of course, are those little wavy things that protect our breathing passages and live maybe like your epithelium, live down in your intestinal tract. Big Hero 6. Hero will be jealous. Korean researchers have developed microbots that can mimic the fluid movements of cilia. Remember, they're going to recreate an organism and make it as human as possible. A research team in South Korea has developed microbots that move by mimicking the movement of cilia, which is the hair-like projections on cells. This work was published in Scientific Reports. To date, there already are microrobots, and that would be out of the Weiss Institute. That would be the home of biologically inspired engineering. Collaboration between Harvard and, oh, I don't remember, MIT, I believe, where they're making those robo-bees as well. This work was published in Scientific Report. There are microrobots that use propulsion mechanisms such as spiral drive motion. What you read about that? That was that bacillus. And progressive wave motion to move. However, microrobots that move utilizing ciliary motion have not been designed due to the difficulty of producing a microstructure with a large number of cilia. In the human body, these projections are important for the movement of small particles in the viscous fluid environment, such as blood. Using techniques such as three-dimensional laser processes, technology, and precise metal coatings, Professor Hong Soo Choi of the Department of Robotics Engineering at Daegu Gyeongbuk Institute of Science and Technology has produced a ciliary microrobot with nickel and titanium coatings on top of photocurable polymer materials. The maximum speed of the ciliary robot, so this sounds like one that's going to be able to probably pass through your bloodstream. I don't know. Remember, nanobots in your blood, which has a length of 220 micrometers at a height of 60 micrometers, is the 340 micrometers per second. Thus, it can move at least 8.6 times faster and 25.8 times faster than conventional microrobots moving under magnetic attraction. Choi said that with precise three-dimensional fabrication techniques and magnetic control technology, his team has developed microrobots mimicking cilia's asymmetric reciprocation movement, which has never been realized so far. And of course, getting closer to the biological, guys, this is what has to be stopped. As they reproduce biological entities, humans become more and more obsolete. We will continually strive to study and experiment on microrobots that can efficiently move and operate in the human body, ding ding, so that they can be utilized in chemical and cell delivery, as well as in non-invasive surgeries. Right. Let's become Star Trek. We want to diagnose you. We'll just swallow this little microrobot, and it'll come out the other end and let us know what's going on. Compared to previously developed microrobots, this one is going to be much better. This is thanks to their ability to freely change direction and to move in an 80 micrometer diameter sphere to a target using a magnetic field. But it gets even worse than that. So, okay, little ciliary robots. We've already talked about the bacillus robots with flagella. We spent a lot of time on that. If you missed any of those shows, just search bacillus, I think I put in the title. Before the first cup and bacillus. This one really disturbed me. Training turtles with parasitic robots. Now, we already found out they took brain cells from worms and brain cells from rats. And they put them into Lego robots, and then they let them bump around in a room, and they discovered how amazing that they started to learn. They also took these micro nanowires and inserted them into a pupa of a moth and then let that moth develop. And when that moth came out of its chrysalis and became an actual moth, they were able to use a joystick and wirelessly steer this moth that had these nanowires inserted into its brain. Now it gets even worse. Oh, wait, there was one more. They had E. coli. We discovered Georgie Porgy Church had fully re-engineered E. coli genome to be able to figure out what was necessary and what wasn't for life and then make all kinds of changes. They were able to engineer E. coli. I'm pretty sure it was E. coli. And then start teaching it. And they found that the E. coli started to exhibit behavior like an animal would, not a bacteria. And that was the scariest part. Like it was showing predatory behavior. Well, here we go. Training turtles with parasitic robots. So it's not just nanobots, it's parasitic robots. Researchers can control the movements of a turtle through a parasitic robot mounted on its carapace, which looks like it's right kind of behind it somewhere. AsianScientist.com, May 24th, 2017. Again, this is something in South Korea Offshore Mad Science Division. By imitating the relationship between parasites and hosts. And remember, we've talked about toxoplasmosis before, and that is that cat poop parasite that lives in the brains of its host and can coax it into loving the kitty cat, just like they found out that mice or rats that were infected with toxoplasmosis don't end up being afraid of the cat. They actually will get eaten by the cat because they love the cat so much. Well, by imitating the relationship between parasites and hosts, a research team from the Korea Advanced Institute of Science and Technology, again, this is that same CASED institute that is working on the $13 million humanoid robot program, has developed a hybrid animal-robot system for waypoint navigation. Their results have been published in the Journal of Bionic Engineering. Now, who knew we had one of those? I had mentioned Steve Austin the other day, the $6 million man. And I was saying, yeah, back in those days, it was just artificial limbs that could make him jump 100 feet high. Well, now we're talking about parasitic robots, implanted in living organisms, so you could use a joystick or just your thoughts to control them. Even with the remarkable technological advancements, robots that operate in complex and harsh environments like Fukushima still face serious limitations in moving and recharging. In contrast, millions of years of evolution have given rise to many animals with excellent locomotion skills that enable them to survive in the natural environment. So why not just usurp all the wonderful things that nature has created instead of trying to create them ourselves because we're such puny humans. Certain kinds of parasites can manipulate the behavior of the host to increase the probability of its own reproduction, and that would be like that toxoplasmosis. Similarly, the team led by Professor Lee Phil Sung proposed using a quote-unquote parasitic robot to guide the behavior of animal hosts. This is really frightening to me as we look more and more at the brain and how they're trying to manipulate the brain with all this mad science gone mad and the involvement of institutions such as DARPA and our whole National Brain Initiative and diagnosing all of us with mental disease on a spectrum. This has got to make you worry just a little bit. Oh, here, take this parasitic robot and call me in the morning. You'll be all fixed up there, Jenny. This team chose a turtle, so it's not a worm, and it's not a rat, and it's not a moth this time. It is a turtle as their first animal host, and designed a parasitic robot that could induce, not force, just induce, coax it a little bit, the turtle's object tracking behavior through repeated training sessions, just like they're doing to robots. Teach them by repetition and feed them more and more and more data. The robot guides, not the robot overlords that make it nice, the robot guides. The robot guides the turtle using LEDs, flashes of light, and we're seeing that more and more. There was another project that we saw that used flashes of light, optogenetics, right on that optic nerve of one of the poor little enslaved creatures we had read about some of the research of to turn it on and off or turn it right and left, something like that. So they were using these robot guides, the turtle using LEDs and feeds its snacks as a reward, dangling carrots for going in the right direction through a programmed algorithm. And after a training session that lasts 5 weeks, the parasitic robot could successfully control the direction of movement of the turtle hosts during a navigation task in a water tank. This hybrid animal-robot interaction system could provide an alternative solution of the limitations of conventional mobile robot systems in various fields. It's got to concern you that they are working on this hybrid animal-robot interaction with parasitic robots at that same center that they are building U.S.-funded humanoid robots in South Korea. I don't know. This to me sounds kind of frightening. Remember, they do this stuff in our offshore manned science labs where we don't have the watchful eye of places like the FDA, which really doesn't keep us safe, but hey, they pretend to, or other organizations. They can do all this stuff under the covers and say, hey, it's all in the name of national security because we have North Korea up there yipping and yapping and threatening us with nuclear Armageddon. We can maybe send these parasitic robots over the border to see what Kim Jong-un is doing. This hybrid animal-robot interaction system could provide an alternate solution of the limitations of conventional mobile robot systems in various fields. The first author of the study, PhD candidate Kim Dae-gun, said that there are a wide variety of animals, including mice, birds and fish that could perform equally as well at such tasks. Remember, we read about the mice already, that they could use a laser and hit it in a special place right in the cranium. And that mouse would turn into a predator where it starts uncontrollably chomping its jaws and trying to attack anything that comes near it, essentially turning an entire forest of little mousies into killer little animals. He said that in the future, not that turtles can move very fast or that they have chompy jaws, but some of them do. He said that in the future, this system could be applied to various exploration and reconnaissance missions that humans and robots find difficult to do on their own. Of course, it's all going to be in the name of rescue and spying. This hybrid animal-robot interaction system could provide an alternative solution to the limitations in various fields, and it could also act as a useful interaction system for behavioral sciences. And if it gets even better, yes, it does. There's another story, March 2nd, 2017, out of the same publication, AsianScientist.com, Mad Science Lab. Steering a turtle with your thoughts. You knew it was coming. Here it comes. Researchers have developed a technology that can remotely control an animal's behavior and movement with human thought. Now, look, guys, how long is this going to be before they start putting stuff like this into humans? Because I'm going to say not too long. You know, they always start on animals first most of the time. And then they go, hey, look at this. It works. And the animal didn't die. Let's go into clinical trial. Johnny, you've been deemed a little bit dangerous. So put this parasitic robot on. Here, we'll just anchor it to the back of your neck. Psst, it won't hurt a bit. And now you can be controlled and surveilled with my thoughts in our mental health research center. Research and Surveillance Center that was outlined in the 21st Century Cures Act that was passed December of 2016. Researchers at the Korea Advanced Institute of Science and Technology, CASED again, have developed a brain-computer interface that control a turtle using human thought. And their findings have been published in that same Journal of Bionic Engineering. I want to see if I can find that. They don't link to it, but we should look for that because that might be an interesting one to subscribe to. Unlike previous research that most notably included insects, that it tried to control animal movements by applying invasive methods. Professor Lee Phil-Song and Joe Sung-ho of the Case Institute propose a conceptual system that can guide an animal's moving path by controlling its instinctive escape behavior. Yes, or humans. Run, Johnny, run. They chose a turtle because he was slow, because of its cognitive abilities, as well as its ability to distinguish between wavelengths of light. Specifically, turtles can recognize a white light source as an open space, and so they move toward it. They also show specific avoidance behavior to things that might obstruct their view. Turtles also move toward and away from obstacles in their environment in a predictable manner. The entire human turtle setup is as follows. There is a head-mounted display, and that is combined with a brain-computer interface to immerse the human user in the turtle's environment. The human operator wears the brain-computer interface head-mounted display system, while the turtle has a quote-unquote cyborg system consisting of a camera, a Wi-Fi transceiver, a computer control module, and a battery, which we just read about that new camera system that uses solar power to give it energy so it doesn't ever go dead. All mounted on the turtle's upper shell, and also included on the turtle's shell, is a black semi-cylinder with a slit, which forms a stimulation device, and this can be turned 36 degrees via the brain-computer interface. The human operator receives images from the camera mounted on the turtle, and these real-time video images allow the human operator to decide where the turtle should move. The human provides thought commands that are recognized by the wearable brain-computer interface system as electrocephalography, which would be ECG signals. So that would be one of those little skull caps. This brain-computer interface can distinguish between three mental states that would be left, right, and idle. So I guess they can't go backwards yet. The left and right commands activate the turtle's stimulation device via Wi-Fi, turning it so that it obstructs the turtle's view. This invokes its natural instinct to move toward the light. Move toward the light, Johnny. And changes its direction. And finally, the human acquires updated visual feedback from the camera mounted on the shell, and in this way continues to remotely navigate the turtle's trajectory. The researchers demonstrate the animal's guiding brain-computer interface in a variety of environments, with turtles moving indoors and outdoors on many different surfaces like gravel and grass, tackling a range of obstacles such as shallow water and trees. And this technology could be developed to integrate positioning systems such as GPS and improved augmented and virtual reality techniques, enabling various applications, including devices for what? Oh, military reconnaissance and surveillance. Ding-a-ling. I told you, that's what fuels a lot of this research. So there you have it, enslaving Mother Nature to become a part of the military-industrial complex. But it gets even better. One more story out of AsianMadScientist.com. Using holographs to move and bend cells. Yes, that would be cells inside of the human body at will. Researchers in South Korea, looks like South Korea is on fire, have used laser holography to control the movement of irregularly shaped microscopic objects, including, oh, red blood cells, like maybe ones that clot together and cause strokes. I don't know, just saying. May 31st, 2017, in a study published in Nature Communications, researchers at the Korean Advanced Institute of Science and Technology, CASE, the same place, describe how they have used a holographic technique to control the position, orientation, and shape of oddly shaped microscopic samples. Conventional optical manipulation techniques called optical tweezers, and we talked about those a long time ago, are invaluable tools for manipulating microscopic particles in 3D. using a tightly focused laser whose beam diameter is smaller than 1 micrometer, that is 1/100th of a hair thickness. Optical tweezers can generate an attractive force on microscopic particles moving toward the focus beam. However, most experiments using optical tweezers have only trapped spherical particles, which the responding motion can easily be predicted. Conventional optical tweezers induce unstable motions of particles with more complex shapes, hindering their use on microscopic objects with complex shapes such as living cells. In the present study, researchers have developed a new optical manipulation technique that can trap complex objects of arbitrary shapes. This technique first measures the 3D structure of an object in real time using 3D holographic microscopes, which share the same physical principles as X-rays used in CT imaging, and that would be CAT scans. Based on the measured 3D shape of an object, the researchers then precisely calculated the shape of light that can stably control the object. I mean, this sounds like literal microscopic laser tractor beams. When the shape of light is the same as the shape of the object, the energy of the object is minimized, making the trapping stable. Moreover, by controlling the positions, directions, and the shape of the light, it is possible to control the motion of a microscopic object in 3D space and then change its shape. Since this process resembles the generation of a mold for casting a statue having desired shape, the researchers named their technique tomographic mold for optical trapping, or tomotrap for short. Using tomotrap, the team succeeded in trapping individual human red blood cells stably, then rotating them with the desired orientations. Then they folded human red blood cells into an L shape and assembling two of the red blood cells together to form a freaky new structure. In addition, colon cancer cells have a complex structure that could be stably trapped and rotated at desired orientations. So yeah, they're going to try to sell it to you as a cure for cancer, but this is pretty horrifying. This is like a laser tractor beam. They can go in and manipulate blood cells and then change their shape, folding things such as proteins and whatever, that then could give you a mysterious disease. Our technique has the advantage of controlling the 3D motion of complex-shaped objects without knowing any prior information about their shape or optical characteristics, and can be applied in various fields, including physics, optics, nanotechnology, and medical science, says the study co-author, Professor Park Yong-King. Dr. Kim Kung-young, the lead author of the study, noted that this technique can induce controlled, quote-unquote, deformation of biological cells with desired shapes. Ding-a-ling. This could be to cure you or, to kill you. And don't worry about it, Johnny. It's all in the name of science. This approach can also be applied to real-time monitoring of surgical prognoses of cellular-level surgeries for capturing and deforming cells, as well as subcellular organelles, he added. So there you have it. I don't know. I was horrified by AsianScientist.com. And it really has to put an exclamation point on how far we have actually come and how far down the road they've actually gone to enslaving you at a cellular level. Well, here was one that came out of Reuters, and this was July 26th, yesterday, 2017. This trend has occurred for over 40 years, but sperm counts are dropping across the Western world. I think that was the plan. Sperm counts from men in America, Europe, Australia, and New Zealand have dropped more than 50% in less than 40 years, says researchers on Tuesday. And I bet Bill Gates is just so damn happy. They also said that the rates of decline is not slowing. So their experiments have worked. Both findings in a meta-analysis bringing together various studies pointed to a potential decline in male health and fertility. This study is an urgent wake-up call for researchers and health authorities around the world to investigate the cause of the sharp ongoing drop in sperm count and soon to be drop in humans of the future. We will be obsolete. Don't worry, we have humanoid robots that are being produced and can be controlled with human thought being developed in South Korea. So there won't be a loss in productivity here on the planet. Don't worry about it. Once you get old and gray and there's no one to take care of you, they will have humanoid care robots for all the old people to wipe your butt, turn you over in bed so you don't get bed sores. This analysis, of course, did not explore the reason for the sperm decline, but researchers said that the falling sperm counts have previously been linked to various factors, such as exposures to certain chemicals and pesticides in your food and in your environment, as well as smoking and stress and obesity, all those things in the Western world that have screwed us all up. This suggests measures of sperm quality may reflect the impact of modern life, yes, and glyphosate, on male health, and act as a canary in the coal mine, signaling broader health risks, such as stroke. Studies have reported declines in sperm count since the early 1990s, but many of those have been questioned, just like global warming, because they did not account for potentially major confounding factors such as age, sexual activity, and the types of men involved. Yeah, I'm sure it has nothing to do with the pesticides that are de-sexing frogs. No. Working with a team of researchers in the United States, Brazil, Denmark, Israel, and Spain, Levine screened and brought together the findings of 185 sperm count studies from 1973 to 2011 and then conducted a so-called meta-regression analysis. The results published in the Journal of Human Reproduction update, didn't know we had one of those either, showed a 52.4% decline in sperm concentration and a 59.3% decline in total sperm count among North American, European, Australian, and New Zealand men. The former measures the concentration of semen, while the latter is semen concentration multiplied by a volume. In contrast, no significant decline was seen in South America, Asia, or Africa. Researchers noted, however, that far fewer studies have been conducted in these regions. Well, it's pretty interesting. Scientists, here's a new one. This is out of ScienceAlert.com. Scientists have observed epigenetic memories being passed down for 14 whole generations. So even stress, smoking, junk food, 14 generations screwed up down the line. The most important set of genetic instructions we get comes from our DNA, passed down through generations. But the environment we live can make genetic changes too, called epigenetics. Researchers have now discovered that these kinds of environmental genetic changes can be passed down for a whopping 14 generations in an animal. The largest span ever observed in a creature, in this case being a dynasty of C. eglans nematodes, or that would be the roundworm. To study how long the environment can leave a mark on genetic expression, a team of scientists from the European Molecular Biology Organization in Spain took genetically engineered nematode worms and carried a transgene for a fluorescent protein, and when that was activated, this gene made the worms glow under ultraviolet light. Then they switched things up for the nematodes by changing the temperature of their containers, and the team kept the nematode at 20 degrees Celsius, which is 68 degrees Fahrenheit, and they measured low activity of the transgene, which meant the worms hardly glowed at all. But by moving these worms to a warmer climate, and that would be 25 degrees Celsius, i.e. 77 degrees Fahrenheit, they suddenly lit up like little wormy Christmas trees. It sounds like the author of the story has listened to one of my shows, Little Wormy Christmas Trees, which meant the fluorescence gene had become much more active. their tropical vacation didn't last long, however. These worms were moved back to the cooler temperature to see what would happen to the activity of their fluorescence gene. And surprisingly, they continued to glow brightly, suggesting that they were retaining an environmental memory of the warmer climate and that the transgene was still highly active. Furthermore, that memory was passed on to their offspring for seven brightly glowing generations, none of whom had experienced the warmer temperatures. These baby worms inherited this epigenetic change both through the egg and the sperm of the nematode. And this team pushed the results even further when they kept five generations of nematodes at 25 degrees Celsius and then banished their offspring to colder temperatures. The worms continued to have higher transgene activity for an unprecedented 14 full generations. That is the longest scientists have ever observed the passing down of an environmentally induced genetic change. And usually, environmental changes to genetic expression only last a few generations. So guys, I'm thinking here, all these chemical companies that are polluting our environment and causing diseases need to be sued 14 times over for all of the future generations that they've screwed up of humanity and be made to pay for damages on an exponential scale. Why wouldn't that be possible? Because it's plausible deniability, but look, they just proved it in research. 14 generations of epigenetic changes to a genetic lineage. Pretty crazy. They say, hey, we don't exactly know how this happens, but it might be a form of biological forward planning. Worms are very short-lived, so perhaps they are transmitting memories of the past conditions to help their descendants predict what their environment might be like in the future. That's a reason why scientists turned to sea egglands as a model organism. After all, those 14 generations would only take 50 days to develop, but can still give us important clues as to how environmental genetic change is passed down in other animals, including humans. I think we should sue 14 generations worth, because you just screwed up all my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren. Thank you very much. There are many examples of this phenomenon in worms and mice, but the study on environmental epigenetic inheritance in humans is, of course, a hotly debated topic. And there's still a lot that we don't know, so don't create a class action lawsuit just yet, because we're going to cry plausible deniability. Inherited effects in humans are difficult to measure due to the long generational times and the difficulty with accurate record keeping. Ding, states one recent review of epigenetic inheritance. But some research suggests that events in our lives can indeed affect the development of our children and perhaps even our grandchildren, all without actually changing the DNA. For example, studies have shown that both the children and grandchildren of women who survived the Dutch famine of 1944 to 45 were found to have increased glucose intolerance in adulthood. Other researchers have found that the descendants of the Holocaust have lower levels of the hormone cortisol, which helps your body bounce back after trauma. The latest study on nematodes is an important step toward understanding more about our own epigenetic inheritance, especially because it serves as a remarkable demonstration of how long-lasting these intergenerational effects may be. And finally, to add the ultimate salt to the wound, are we becoming more stupid as a human race? Well, IQ scores are decreasing, and some experts argue it has become because humans have reached their intellectual peak, and maybe they are designing us that way. This is out of the Daily Mail from August of 2014. It's been going on for a while, and it shows a chart where it's up high, and it by 2100, it goes from 92 IQ, which I really hope that isn't the average. That might explain a lot. Down to like 84. Dumb and dumber. Technology may be getting smarter, but humans are getting dumber. Scientists have warned, and I think that is all by design. Evidence suggests that the IQs of people in the UK, Denmark, and Australia have declined over the last decade. An opinion is divided as to whether this is a long-term trend, but some researchers believe that humans have already reached their intellectual peak. An IQ test used to determine whether Danish men are fit to serve in the military has revealed scores that have fallen by 1.5 points since 1998. And standard tests issued in the UK and Australia echo the same results, according to journalist Bob Holmes in New Scientist magazine. The most pessimistic explanation as to why humans seem to be becoming less intelligent is that we have effectively reached our intellectual peak. And yes, your brain is just like the human body. If you don't use it, you lose it. Our brains are getting flabby. And as we live on convenience and our electronic devices, we become vegetables as we need information to be fed to us, and we have forgotten how to think for ourselves. Between the 1930s and the 1980s, the average IQ score in the U.S. rose by 3 points, and in post-war Japan and Denmark, test scores also increased significantly, a trend known as the Flynn effect. But this increase in intelligence was due to improved nutrition and living conditions, as well as better education, says James Flynn at the University of Otago, after whom the effect is named. And that's pretty interesting because better nutrition, before they started dumping glyphosate and high fructose corn syrup into everything that we consume, that has since made our ability to break down proper nutrients. And as devices and computers through the 1980s came about, that we had the dopamine effect, that we were addicted. Our intelligence levels have declined. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. I will try to catch up with you on Monday, but Dr. Swiss is coming.